Hey guys, Mike here from Mercado Airwaves. We want to thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network. And if you want to see what we're up to outside of the station, please follow us all over social media. I'm on Twitter at MikeMMedia and on Instagram at MikeMercadoMedia. You can follow the good brother Alex Mercado on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. The lovely Nicole Mancha is on all social media platforms at TypingWhenTipsy. You can follow the network on Twitter at Mercado Airwaves. Our pop culture show, The Good Brothers, on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod. Our true crime shows on Instagram at Murder Mysteries and More. And of course, like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves. You can see all our videos on YouTube.com/MikeMercado2333 or by searching Mercado Airwaves Network. We play video games on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network. And of course, you could support our network by finding a tier just for you, whether you want early access, you want to be part of polls, you want to win contest prizes by visiting us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. And we really appreciate it wherever you get your favorite podcast to like, rate, review, and share us. And please spread the word. For the good brother, Alex Mercado, for the lovely Nicole Mancha, I'm Mike Mercado. Thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network.
Hello and welcome in, friends, to Sports from the Couch here on the Mercado Airwaves Network. I'm your host, Mike Mercado. I want to thank you so much for making us a part of your day. And thank you for joining us for our review of The Last Dance Parts 3 and 4 from ESPN as we get ready for episodes 5 and 6 to drop this coming up Sunday, May 3rd, 2020. And the best place to start off is where the series picked right back up with, and that had to deal with Dennis Rodman and what ended up being the genius that came out from that entire time. Now, there was obviously the 30 for 30 that came out about Dennis Rodman a little while back, and I think the documentary did a good series of focusing on him and also talking about some stories that we hadn't heard before. I think the one about Dennis Rodman, the 30 for 30 that was specific about him, really did a great job of talking about his upbringing and what that meant and the growth spurt and why he was so aggressive and where the flamboyantness came from. What The Last Dance does a great job of is talking about the impact it made at the end of his run, at the end of this Bulls run. Pippen even mentions it. He says Rodman fit like a hand in a glove. And, you know, a lot of people always wondered, how did somebody so serious like Michael, even though we see him, you know, busting chops on a lot of people and quite frankly being a little bit of a jerk, but that's all right though. We always knew that about Michael here in the great city of Chicago. But we always wondered, how did that relationship work with Dennis, Scotty, Michael, and Phil? And we got a lot of great stories about it, from Carmen Electra and the 8-day binge to this right here. And we got this from the great people of ESPN. And just take a listen. This is Dennis Rodman talking about timing of rebounding.
I just practiced a lot about the angle of the ball and trajectory of it. You got a Larry Bird, it's going to spin. You got a Magic, it may spin. When Michael shoot over here, I position myself right there. Now I hit the rim, it's boom, click and go back this way, boom, here, click and go that way, boom, that way, click here and go back this way. So basically, I just start learning how to put myself in a position to get the ball.
And that just goes to show the genius that is Dennis Rodman at the craft that he had. But here's the thing, too. They didn't ignore all the craziness. And it's crazy. So let's read this really fast. After Scottie Pippen returned in January of 1998, Rodman sought out Jordan to tell him he needed a vacation. Quote, when Dennis wants to tell me something, I know it's not something that I'll, quote, fucking want to hear, MJ says in episode 3. Rodman told Jordan that he needed a vacation and that he wanted to go to Las Vegas. Quote, people don't understand. It's not just basketball that we have to deal with on this team. It's the pressure of the bullshit, a younger Rodman says in separate footage from the Bulls locker room. I'll play the game for free, but you get paid for the bullshit after you leave the floor. That's an interesting quote, a little bit truth, a little bit of false, but that's a very interesting one to go into the mindset and the thinking that was Dennis at that time. The team gave Rodman 48 hours, which he proceeded to blow past while partying. Quote, he didn't come back on time. We had to get his ass out of bed, Jordan said. And I'm not going to say what was in his bed or where he was. And then amazingly, we find out that it was Carmen Electra this entire time. That's who Michael Jordan is speaking of. So she tells the story how when Michael came in knocking on the door, she just hid under the covers to grab Dennis. But it's one of those funny moments, and it's one of those surreal moments where in 1998, this is happening, where the leader of the team, Michael Jordan, is going to a hotel room to grab Dennis Rodman and tell him, we have to go. And it's interesting because in the documentary, they mention how when Scotty was gone and dealing with the drama with the front office and his injury, Dennis really took over that second man role and loved it, loved being Michael's wingman. When Scotty came back, Dennis knew he was going to take a step back, and it took him a little bit to get his groove back into that. But it shows how important Dennis was to Michael and the Bulls winning the title. Because if Michael didn't care, Michael would have moved on. We know how cold Jordan is. So for him to seek Dennis, to go out of his way and do that, was really telling. But there's a lot of great little moments in that when you know, when you see the guys' faces, when they know Dennis is about to be gone, when Michael knows that we're not seeing this guy come back, but also seeing the genius that is Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson knew that he had a certain type of personality on that locker room. And I think he also knew, it being their last dance, that he was going to do whatever it took to win a championship. And the documentary goes into a lot of what happened with Phil Jackson first getting into the organization. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. But we do that time lapse thing again. And we go back to the past where Dennis was a bad boy. And we go through the entire time of seeing the shot over Greg Elo. And, you know, how Harper was mad because he wanted to be on Jordan. And all of them admitted that Elo should not have been on Jordan. And how that changes the entire history of the Chicago Bulls. That they could get over a certain hump. Cleveland was really good. I don't think a lot of people understand that because it's became a moment in time. But that was one cool moment to really understand, and you actually see the inside. It's not just a commercial. It's not just a marketing tool. But you actually see what people were thinking that time. And, you know, we even got quotes here. Jordan says the Cavs screwed up. They had Craig Elo on me at that time, which honestly was a mistake. Because the guy that played me better was Ron Harper. Harper, then a star guard for Cleveland, recalls his action to Elo being put on Jordan instead. Yeah, okay, whatever. Fuck this bullshit. We know what happened next. Michael stuck it, baby. Even better, here's what he said while celebrating. Again, just goes to show who Jordan is. I never knew this. You know, we always see him so hyped up, and here being in Chicago, I never knew what he was screaming. Get the fuck out of here. You could go anywhere, but you're out of here. Whoever's not with us, all you fuckers go to hell. Dude, Jordan was cold. Jordan was cold. But the Pistons were colder. And this is what I appreciated from the documentary. We've always heard about the Jordan rules. Either from playing basketball, from being a Chicago sports fan, from being a sports historian, you always know what the Jordan rules are in theory, right? You know that the Pistons used it, and you kind of have an idea. But we actually got to hear the guys behind it talk about it. And it's really telling, and it shows just the hatred they still have for one another. I mean, from what we saw with Laimbeer and Isaiah Thomas and all the interviews since, man, there's some hostility there. And just some of the way Jordan reacts to Isaiah. So here we go. I got some quotes. It's fair to say that there's no love lost between Jordan and the late 80s Pistons, whose notorious, quote, Jordan rules basically meant beating up the Bull star anytime he drove toward the basket. I don't know how he came out of it alive, former Lakers star James Worthy says in episode 3. Quote, oh, I hated them. That hate carries even to this day, Jordan says of those Detroit teams. They made it personal. They physically beat the shit out of us. After losing Game 7 of the 1990 East Finals, Jordan resolved to get stronger. Quote, I was getting brutally beaten up, and I want to administer pain, Jordan said in episode 4. I want to start fighting back. Now, here's the thing, though. No one was better at being roughed in the Detroit bad boys. They saved their nastiest for Jordan, and the only thing the Pistons did was not undercut Jordan when he was 3 or 4 feet off the court. Otherwise, everything went. Elbows after the whistles, shoves in the small of his back, whacks across the head or neck. Quote, every time he goes to the basket, put him on the ground, Rodman reflected. Quote, we tried to physically hurt Mike. And when you hear that quote from Dennis Rodman, I guess kind of going all the way full circle with Dennis, is that was the interesting part. A lot of people are wondering, well, how are they going to handle bringing Dennis into this situation after everything that happened in between him and the Bulls in the early 90s? And there was a maturity thing that happened between those bad boys and the Chicago Bulls. So I guess the elephant in the room is, what do I think about the Pistons walking out of the game and not shaking the Bulls' hands? Look, life moved on. It's not the biggest deal in the world, especially when you're dealing with the global pandemic. It's a bitch move. You know, it is. I was texting the good brother, Alex, about this, and we both literally texted bitch at the same time, and then Horace Grant says it, and it's just this code of honor. You know, and I get it. You know, everybody has their own thing. Everybody's going to have their own opinion. It does not take away how dominant those Pistons were, how great those Pistons were, how great Isaiah is. It's a bitch move. It just is what it is. And that's okay. What's fascinating is just the hatred, though, between Michael and Isaiah. And we've all heard the rumors. We've heard the stories about Isaiah icing him out during the All-Star game. And then we hear about Jordan saying, no, Isaiah's not on the Dream Team. So both guys have been petty. And it was a different sport. They were more physical. Whether you want to argue if the sport is better because of that physicality, that's different. The fact remains is they were physical. And they did have a hard time playing against each other. And there is a certain animosity that they have with each other. Here's some other quotes. When the Bulls finally took down Detroit in the 1991 East Finals, the Pistons walked off the court before the game was over. In one of the documentary's more testy moments thus far, Jordan has shown recent footage of Thomas explaining why the Pistons did nothing wrong that night. Quote, well, I know it's all bullshit, Jordan says before even hearing the explanation. Whatever he says now, you know it wasn't his true actions then. Quote, you can show me anything you want. There's no way you're going to convince me he wasn't an asshole. Jordan noted that he shook hands with the Pistons each time they beat the Bulls. There's a certain respect to the game that we pay to them, Jordan said. That sportsmanship, no matter how much it hurts. And then, of course, there was the legend himself, Horace Grant, with probably the line of the night.
Straight up bitches.
So the hatred is real. I mean, it is real. And I don't know if that fence will ever be mended. We know one thing about Michael is he holds grudges. So I don't think we're ever going to see the end of this Isaiah, Lambeer, Jordan, Pippen, Pistons, Bulls rivalry. We just won't. What's amazing is Chuck Daly was the coach of the Dream Team, and the whole Isaiah thing still happened. So there's a lot of craziness to this Pistons-Bulls story, and it's not the end of what we're going to hear about it. It's just not. And I like Isaiah Thomas, too. That's the thing. Like, I actually enjoy Isaiah Thomas. I think he's a horrible executive. But he's one of the greatest NBA point guards of all time. He's one of the greatest Chicago-born athletes of all time. I love Isaiah. I love Michael a little bit more. I think they're all a little petty, but that's what happens when you have the greatest athletes of all time that hate each other. Their competitiveness, their competitive juices just go really far. And I think the Pistons were wrong for what they did. I think a lot of the Bulls won on the other end. The problem is they're both champions, and they both kept each other from winning more. So it's an interesting rivalry that will go on forever. And it's also interesting that a lot of people are finally realizing that Michael, as great as he is, did lose game. I think a lot of people want to give these athletes and all sports a hard time for losing. And for some reason, Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan never lost. But, like, it happens, guys. So fascinating part. I love the storyline about the Bulls and the Pistons. And we could talk about this all day. One of the big stories, too, though, was Doug Collins coming in and then leaves. And it really all deals with Tex Winter and Phil Jackson and that triangle offense. So here's some other stuff. Jordan initially wasn't happy when the Bulls installed Jackson as head coach in replace of Collins. Jordan had been close to Collins, and he knew that Jackson intended to implement the triangle offense, which would spread the ball around more often. Quote, I wasn't a Phil Jackson fan when he first came in, Jordan says in episode 4. He was coming in to take the ball out of my hands. Doug put the ball in my hands. Jackson's plan elevated many of Jordan's teammates, including Pippen, who said the new coach's, quote, approach was catered to the team. I think one thing Jordan was really worried about and why he had so much control over it is he was worried about coming out selfish. And that's the fascinating thing about all of this, about the mindset of Michael. He was just like a lot of these young players in every sport are. They came in flashy. They wanted the ball. They wanted the points. They wanted the glory. They wanted to win. But it's not until you let everybody else around you grow, get better, that you become better, that the team becomes better, the machine is better ran. That's the thing. A car can have the greatest of engines, but if its motor isn't going, if the tires aren't aligned, it's not going anywhere. And that's what Michael needed to realize. That's what LeBron needed to realize. So a lot of great stars find out is it's not until you make the people around you better that you become great. You can have all the talent in the world, all the skill in the world. What does it mean if you don't make the people around you better? I think that's a fair argument to make about athletes, because it's the same thing argument you can make about the general person. Do you make people around you better? Do you make the places that you go to better? And Michael had to learn that. And the fact that Phil Jackson was able to get through Michael, and Michael was able to understand that, process that, and implement it, is why they won 6 NBA titles, is why they were a dynasty, is why they were the Beatles, and why they have a 10-part documentary coming out to some of the highest ratings.
And finally, we end up with the Bulls meeting the Lakers in the finals, and history, we all know how it ends up playing out. The Bulls beat the Lakers. Scottie's put on Magic, shuts him down. Michael goes off. Bulls won their first title. And we see a lot of cool imagery I don't think we've ever seen before. We see that photo of Michael crying with Magic in the hallway. And we've all seen the picture of Michael crying with the trophy, right? The Larry O'Brien trophy. But that moment of seeing essentially Magic pass the baton to Michael, passing the torch to the next generation, we've never seen that before. And a little surprisingly, because the NBA loves showing that. The NBA loves showing the old generation giving it to the new generation. But that one's been pretty well hidden, at least, you know, for me. And I'm somebody who's seen a lot of the stuff from that time. And then we get to the point where we're seeing Jerry Krause dancing with the team, and you know, they're all super excited. And then the bomb, quote, "If Michael chooses to leave because there's another coach here, then it is his choice, not ours," quote, Krause was quoted in the Chicago Tribune while the team was preparing for a finals preview in Salt Lake City, a huge game in the regular season to really kind of get things going, to kind of gauge where the other team is. As you probably already knew that you two were going to meet in the NBA Finals, the general manager drops that bomb. And this is my big thing about Jerry Krause. Jerry Krause deserves all the credit for being an architect of this team. You can't deny it. Hall of Famer, one of the greatest general managers in all of sports. And yes, there is some moments when you're watching this where you feel really bad for him as he's getting made fun of. And you can see how ruthless they were towards him. Don't get it twisted. So was he. This was an alpha. And people want to disguise it for it. And this is, quote, what people always say about him: the small, short, fat Jewish guy in the NBA. That doesn't change anything. He was still a alpha millionaire front office executive in the Chicago Bulls, in the NBA. No, he did not lack self-esteem. Maybe he wanted more acknowledgement, which is ego. And maybe the players thought too little of him. Both things can be true. You can have two thoughts at the same time, guys. So you could feel bad for Jerry Krause. You could feel empathy towards him being quote-unquote bullied. Don't get it twisted, though. How many times did this guy take a shot at people? How many times was this guy looking forward to the future, trying to replace somebody, always looking for the next hot thing? Which is great in a lot of aspects, how you wish we had that in the Bulls organization leading into the new regime change. And we haven't seen that since in that Bulls organization, where there's always these news drops. And, you know, there's always this flux and who's going to be here, who's not going to be here. You know, and it's just now until we've seen that with Karnishevich coming in to be the new VP and they bringing in Mark Eversley for the new GM. There's usually no turmoil when it comes to the front office. It's usually pretty even keel. What Jerry Krause was doing was crazy. Jerry Krause was saying all this in the middle of a run for the 6th NBA championship. You can say whatever you want about how the optics look. At the end of the day, he didn't need to do that. Sometimes the best leaders are the ones who let everybody else take the credit. It's okay to want some acknowledgement. You want to know where he got that acknowledgement? Being in the Hall of Fame. Getting those contracts. 6 NBA championships. People don't boo Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein. People don't boo Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn. Jerry Krause got booed for a reason. There was a narrative for a reason. Was Jerry Krause a good guy? Yeah. Yeah, he was a decent dude. And it sucks that he's getting dragged through the mud. But as an executive in that time, he set himself up for that. And there's nobody else to blame. Would I love for Jerry to still be here? Period, of course. Would we love Jerry to be here to kind of be part of this documentary, to review it, to have his thoughts? Of course. But what's he going to say? What's he going to say to forgive the fact that the only reason Michael wasn't going to come back is if Phil wasn't here? It's a pretty easy choice. And I still think Jerry Reinsdorf is getting a free pass in this. He is the owner. He signs the checks. He makes final decisions. It's unreal to me that you can have so much success, that there could be so much goodwill towards you. You would essentially, using the old adage, drop the turd in the punch bowl. Didn't need to happen. That's why you don't see it today. That's why it's such news when executives speak out like that. This team was still winning. This team was still showing up. This team was still selling out. And they were doing all their obligations. The problem isn't that he wanted to end them in 1998. The problem is he's been trying to end them since 1995. That was a problem. And I get heated about it now because this documentary does such a great job of bringing up these raw emotions from being from the city, from being in an age group where you could kind of remember some of this, and then seeing where the organization went from there. Over time, I hope we're able to make the connection of when that final Bulls last run season happened to where they're at now, why they haven't succeeded. Why is there such a bad taste in the mouth of people in the NBA? And we've seen a little bit of it. And I think that's what's bringing up a lot of emotions from people. But at the end of the day, and I think we're going to see this in the documentary, we're going to see a lot of faults of a lot of people. We've seen some from Dennis. We've seen some from Scotty. We've been seeing them from Michael. I think they're going to get into the gambling stuff eventually and the baseball stuff. And we need to get into Jerry Krause's success. Him building these teams, him drafting these players, making the right trades. He does deserve that dap. And if everything goes the way it has been, I think this documentary will end up doing that because this documentary has been very well made. One of the better ones. And I can't wait to see what episodes 5 and 6 have in store for us. But until then, let us know, what did you think about episodes 3 and 4 of The Last Dance? Follow me on Twitter at MikeMMedia and on Instagram at MikeMercadoMedia. Give us a like, rate, review, and share us wherever you get your favorite podcasts at Mercado Airwaves. It really helps us out. If you leave a comment, give us 5 stars. It will really help grow the brand. Visit us at youtube.com/Mercado Airwaves Network. If you missed any one of our Let's Plays or any one of our past podcasts and interviews, we're on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network. If you want to come play video games with us, we've just finished Resident Evil 3. And I'm thinking maybe MLB The Show 2020 will be next on deck. So stay tuned for that. Like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves. And visit us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves Network, the home to our interviews with athletes and celebrities that you get exclusively before anybody else and ad-free. That's patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves Network. Thank you all so much for joining us today. Please be safe. Take care of each other. Enjoy episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance. You've been tuned in to Sports from the Couch here on the Mercado Airwaves Network.
Hey guys, Mike here from Mercado Airwaves. We want to thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network. And if you want to see what we're up to outside of the station, please follow us all over social media. I'm on Twitter at MikeMMedia and on Instagram at MikeMercadoMedia. You can follow the good brother Alex Mercado on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. The lovely Nicole Mancha is on all social media platforms at TypingWhenTipsy. You can follow the network on Twitter at Mercado Airwaves. Our pop culture show, The Good Brothers, on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod. Our true crime shows on Instagram at Murder Mysteries and More. And of course, like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves. You can see all our videos on YouTube.com/MikeMercado2333 or by searching Mercado Airwaves Network. We play video games on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network. And of course, you could support our network by finding a tier just for you, whether you want early access, you want to be part of polls, you want to win content prizes by visiting us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. And we really appreciate it wherever you get your favorite podcast to like, rate, review, and share us. And please spread the word. For the good brother Alex Mercado, for the lovely Nicole Mancha, I'm Mike Mercado. Thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network.